take these moments as messages from the other side and allow them to bring sustenance to you. Angels or other heavenly hosts. In recent years, there has been a resurgence in the popularity of angels. The Roman Catholic Church defines angels as spiritual, intelligent, non-corporeal beings who are servants and messengers of God. The position of the Christian Church is that these beings have never incarnated on earth. We think of angels as white-robed figures with wings and a halo, theological images which have come down to us from the Middle Ages. Many clients initially think they see angels when I regress them into the spirit world, especially those with strong religious convictions. This reaction is similar to the devotional responses of some people who have had near-death experiences. However, regardless of prior religious conditioning, my subjects soon realize the etheric beings they are visualizing in hypnosis represent their guides and soul companions who have come to meet them. These spiritual beings are surrounded by white light and may appear in robes. In my work, guides are sometimes described as guardian angels, although our personal teachers are beings who have incarnated in physical form long before graduating to the level of guides. An intimate soulmate in discarnate form can also come to the gate to comfort us in times of need. I feel believing in angels emanates from an inner desire for personal protection on the part of many people. In making this observation, it is not my intention to set aside the faith of millions of religious people in angels. For many years I lacked faith in anything beyond my own existence. I know the importance of believing in something greater than yourself. Our faith is what sustains us in life, and this applies to believing that there are superior beings who watch over us. My case presentations are intended to give weight to the concept of benevolent spirits in our lives. Our spiritual teachers have different styles and techniques, just as teachers on earth. Their immortal character has been matched to our own essence in a variety of ways. The next two abbreviated cases illustrate my contention that personal guides and soulmates, however they are represented, contact us from the other side if we require consolation. Case 10. The following statements come from Renee, a 40-year-old widow who lost her husband, Harry, 3 months before our appointment. I waited until after our session before asking her the series of questions that follow. My intent was to have Renee contrast the conscious versus superconscious imagery she had of her guide, Nyarth. Dr. N., before our session today, have you had any contact with the being you saw in hypnosis as Nyarth? S., yes, since Harry's death Nyarth has come to me during my dark hours. Dr. N., did Nyarth appear to be the same to you before and after this hypnosis session? S., no, I didn't see her quite the same way. I thought she was an angel before, and now I see Nyarth is my teacher. Dr. N., were her face and demeanor different to you while you were under hypnosis, compared to what you saw when awake? S. laughs, today there were no wings or a halo, but bright light, that was the same, and her face and gentle manner were the same too. I also see that in our spirit group she can be sharply instructive. Dr. N., more of a teacher and less of a grief counselor, you mean? S. yes, perhaps that's it. Right after Harry's death she was so sweet and understanding when she came to me, rushing on, that doesn't mean she isn't nice in the spirit world, just more exacting. Dr. N., did you do anything to summon Nyarth right after Harry's death? S. I was crying for help after the funeral. I found out that I needed to be alone and very still, to listen. Dr. N., does this mean you heard Nyarth rather than actually saw her? S. No, in the beginning I saw her floating over my head in my bedroom. One had my arms wrapped around a pillow pretending it was Harry, but I had stopped crying. She became fuzzy after one first saw her, and I realized then one had to listen carefully for her voice. In the days that followed I heard Nyarth more than I saw her, but I had to listen. Dr. N., does that mean concentrate? S., yes, well, no, more allowing my mind to go free from my body. Dr. N., what happens when you don't listen properly but you want her messages? S., then she communicates with me through my feelings. Dr. N., In what waff? S.O., I might be driving alone or out walking by myself, wondering about doing something, taking a certain action. She will make me feel good about it if I am supposed to do it, if it is right. Dr. N., and what if the action you are considering would be wrong for you, then what? S., Nyoth will make me feel uneasy about doing it. I will know in my gut it is a wrong move. My next case excerpt involves a young man who died in a car crash in 1942 at age 36. He gives us another perspective on the mythology of angels from a soul reaching back to Earth. Case 11. Dr. N., tell me what you did for your wife after the crash? S., I stayed around for 3 days with Betty to lessen her heaviness. I positioned myself over her head so our energy fields crossed in such a way that I could soothe her by matching our vibrations. Dr. N., did you employ any other techniques? S., yes, I projected my likeness in front of her face. Dr. N., was this effective? S., playfully, initially, she thought I was Jesus. The second day she was confused and the third day Betty was convinced I was an angel. My wife is very religious. Dr. N., are you bothered that she didn't recognize you because of her religious convictions? S., not at all. Then, after some hesitation, oh, I suppose it would please me if Betty realized it was me, but her feeling better is my main concern. Betty is convinced I am a heavenly deity, and that is okay because I do represent spiritual help for her. Dr. N., would she feel even better knowing it was you? S., look, Betty thinks I'm in heaven and can't help her. Her angel is able to do so because it's really me. So, I'm in disguise, what's the difference as long as my goal to help her is accomplished? Dr. N., well, since Betty has not connected you with your disguise, is there any other way you can communicate on a more personal level? S., smiles, through my best friend, Ted. He consoles her and gives her advice with day-to-day details. Later I hover over the both of them sending permissive messages. Subject then laughs. Dr. N., what do you find humorous? S., Ted is not married. He has been in love with Betty for a long time, but she doesn't realize it yet. Dr. N., is this all right with you? S., cheerfully, yet with nostalgia, sure. I'm relieved he can do what I can't anymore for her, at least until she returns home to me. Finally, there are those angelic spirits who regularly come to Earth between lives simply to help people they don't know who are in distress. They may be healers in training, as was true with the client who said to me, my guide and I assisted a boy in India who was drowning and consumed by fear. His parents pulled him from the river and were trying to resuscitate him, but he was not responding well. One placed my hands on his head to quiet his fear, sent a spike of energy into his heart to bring warmth into his body, and superimposed his essence with mine for a moment, to help him cough up the water and start breathing again. We were able to help a total of 24 people on that trip to Earth. Emotional recovery of souls and survivors. The last remarks from case 11 about his wife, Betty, and those of case 3 who talked about her husband, Kevin, touch upon the issue of later relationships by the survivor. Falling in love again after the death of a spouse sometimes causes feelings of guilt and even betrayal. In both these cases we saw that the departing spouses only wanted their surviving mates to be happy and loved. However, just because spirits want this for us does not mean that we can easily compartmentalize our expressions of intimacy to past and present loves. People who have had long, happy first marriages and then lose a spouse make excellent candidates for a successful second marriage. This is a tribute to the first relationship. Having other relationships neither lessens nor dishonors our first love. It only validates that love, providing a state of healthy acceptance, has been reached in between. I know placing aside feelings of guilt is easier said than done. I have received letters from widows and widowers asking me if their departed spouses could actually be watching them in the bedroom with someone else. In my summary of the spirit world, I indicated that souls lose most of their negative emotional baggage when they shed their bodies. Although it is true we may carry the imprint of some emotional trauma from a past life into the next one, this condition is in a state of abeyance until we return to a new body. Also, a great deal of negative energy is expelled during the early stages of our return to the spirit world, especially after deprogramming during orientation. When a soul once again returns to a pure energy state in the spirit world, it no longer feels hate, anger, envy, jealousy and the like. It has come to Earth to experience these sorts of emotions and learn from them. But after departing from Earth, do souls feel any sadness for what they have left behind? Certainly, souls carry nostalgia for the good times in all their past physical lives. This is tempered by a state of blissful omniscience and such a heightened sense of well-being that souls feel more alive than when they were on Earth. Nevertheless, I have found two sorts of negative emotions that exist within souls, both of which involve a form of sadness. One of them I would call karmic guilt for making very poor choices, especially when others were hurt by these actions. I will treat these aspects later under karma. The other form of sadness for souls is not melancholy, dejection, or a mournful unhappiness in the way life has gone on without them since their departure. Rather, sadness in souls comes from a longing to reunite with the source of their existence. I believe all souls, regardless of their level of development, have this longing to seek perfection for the same reason. The motivating factor for those souls who come to Earth is growth. Thus, the trace of sadness I discern in souls is the absence of elements in their immortal character that they must find to make their energy complete. And so it is a soul's destiny to search for truth in their experiences in order to gain wisdom. It is important for the survivor to know that longing does not compromise a soul's feelings of empathy, sympathy and compassion for those who grieve for them. Since the immortal character of the soul is no longer encumbered by individual temperament and the chemistry of its last body, it is at peace. Souls have much better things to do than interfere with people on Earth. In rare cases, certain souls are so disturbed by an act of injustice against them in life that they won't leave Earth's astral plane after death until they gain some sort of resolution. I will discuss more of this phenomenon under the subject of ghosts. The spiritual conflict with these souls does not include sadness over you finding happiness with someone else, unless, of course, you did something like murder your lover to be with another. The one great advantage the departed soul has over a survivor is knowing it is still alive and will be seeing everyone who is meaningful to them again. The integrity of souls involves an all-consuming desire that those they love have the free choice to finish their lives in any way they want. If you wish a soul to come to you, it probably will, otherwise your privacy is respected. Besides, a part of your energy which you left behind in the spirit world is always there for them. Since souls lose so many negative emotions upon re-entering the spirit world, it follows that their positive affections also undergo alterations. For instance, souls feel great love, but this love places no conditions upon others for reciprocity because it is given freely. Souls display universal coherence with each other that is so absolute it is incomprehensible on Earth. This is one reason why souls appear to be both abstract and empathetic to us at the same time. I have heard of some cultural traditions which advise that survivors must let the deceased go and not try to communicate with them because souls have more important work to do. Indeed, souls do not want you to become dependent upon communication with them to the detriment of independent decision-making. Yet many survivors require not only solace but also some sort of approval in the forming of a new relationship. I hope my next case will help dispel the idea that the departed are uninterested in your future. Your privacy is respected by the spirit of your love when you are content. Still, if a prospective course of action, particularly bonding with someone else, leaves you unsettled, they might try to make their opinions known. Because of the nature of soul duality, they are quite capable of performing many tasks at once. This includes a soul's quiet time in solitude where they focus energy on people they have left behind. Souls do this to bring us greater peace even when we are not calling on them for help. Case 12. George came to me in a state of some distress over feelings of guilt about a new love in his life. He had been a widower for 2 years after a long and happy marriage to Francis. George wondered if she was looking down on him with displeasure over his developing relationship with Dorothy. I was told Dorothy and her deceased husband, Frank, had been close friends of George and Francis. Nonetheless, George felt his increased attraction to Dorothy might be considered an act of betrayal. I begin this case at the point in our session when George sees Francis after a former life together. Dr. N, now that you have entered the circle of your soulmates, who comes forward first? S, cries out, "Oh God, it's Francis, it's her. I've missed you so much, dear. She is so beautiful. We have been together, from the beginning." Dr. N, you see that you never really lost her in your current life, don't you, and that she will be waiting for you when it is your time to go? S, yes, I always felt it, but now I know. Note, George now breaks down and we are unable to continue for a while. During this time I want my subject to get used to hugging his wife again and talking to her through his superconscious mind. He strongly believes that his guide and my own conspired to bring him to this juncture. I explain that the information he will gain should help him move on in his life with Dorothy. The catalyst for this awareness is evident when we start to identify other members of George's soul group. Dr. N, I want you now to identify the figures standing near Francis. S, brightens, "Oh, really, I can't believe, but, of course, it makes sense now." Dr. N, what makes sense? S, it's Dorothy and, becomes very emotional, and Frank, they are standing together next to Francis, smiling at me, don't you see? Dr. N, what should I see? S, that they have brought us closer together, Dorothy and me. Dr. N, explain why you think this is so. S, am patient with me, they are happy that we have found each other in an intimate way. Dorothy has grieved a long time herself over Frank, and the grief we both feel is being dispelled by having the company of each other. Dr. N, and you see that all four of you are in the same soul group? S, yes, but I had no idea this was true. Dr. N, how are Francis and Dorothy different as souls? S, Francis is a very strong teaching soul while Dorothy is more artistic and creative, gentle. Dorothy is a peaceful spirit and able to adapt more easily to existing conditions than the rest of us. Dr. N, now that you have the approval of Francis and Frank, what will Dorothy gain from associating with you as your second wife in this life? S, comfort, understanding, love. I can provide her with more protection because 1 am goal-oriented. I challenge things Dorothy takes for granted. She is very accepting. We have a good balance. Dr. N, is Dorothy your primary soulmate? S, emphatically, no, it's Francis. Dorothy usually matches with Frank in their lives, but we are all very close. Dr. N, have you and Dorothy worked together before in other lives? S, yes, but in different situations. She often takes the role of my sister, a niece, or close friend. Dr. N, why are you usually matched with Francis as a mate? S, Francis and I have been with each other from the beginning. We are so close because we have struggled together, helping each other. She was always able to make me laugh at my serious nature, at my foolishness. When I closed this segment of our session, I felt that George had gained much insight. He was overjoyed at learning that it was no accident he and Dorothy were drawn together. All four souls knew their current timelines in advance. I have had similar information come to me from clients who were not in the same soul group as their new love interest, but were connected as affiliated souls from nearby groups. I find most people know if the person they live with is not a significant soulmate. This does not mean they can't have good relationships with souls out of their group. I will quote the statement from a client who died before his wife in their previous life together. When I reach out to comfort my wife after my death, I do so as a friend and partner. We were not really in love. She was not an intimate soulmate for me, nor was one to her. I have a great deal of respect for her. We needed this relationship to work on those things which played to our individual strengths and weaknesses. So, I don't say, I love you into her mind because she would know it isn't true. She might then confuse my spirit with her soulmate. Our life contract is done, and if she wishes, I want her to take another person into her heart, reuniting with those we love. It is fitting that I close this chapter on death with a case illustrating what it is like for soulmates who reunite on the other side. The case involves a widow who meets her husband at the gateway following a long separation. Case 13, Dr. N, who meets you right after death. S, I tease him. Eric, oh, at last, my love, Dr. N, after calming my client, this man is your husband? S, yes, we are coming together right after I cross over, before I see our guide. Dr. N, tell me how everything unfolds, including the way feelings of endearment are transmitted between you and Eric. S, we start with the eyes, from a little distance away, looking deep into each other. The knowing of everything flowing between our minds, of all that we have meant to each other, our energy gets sucked up into a magnetic pool of indescribable joy, blending the two of us together. Dr. N, at this moment have you both assumed the physical form you had in the last life? S, laughing, yes, very rapidly we start with the first time we met, how we looked to each other, and move through the phases of body changes during our long marriage. It's not definitive because we don't settle on just 1 year of our life together. It's more, swirling energy patterns right now. We even pick up on other bodies we had together in previous lives, too. Dr. N, were you usually female in those lives? S, mostly, yes. Later, we will revert to a mixed gender pattern because there were good times in our past lives when he was female and I was male. Pause. But it is just fun right now to be the people we were in our last life. Note, my client asks me to please not ask her any more questions for a few minutes. She and Eric embrace, and when she speaks to me again it is to describe how their energy flowed together. S, it is an ecstasy of coalescing. Dr. N, this spiritual passion sounds almost erotic to me. S, of course, but it is so much more. I can't really describe it, but the rapture we feel for each other comes from all our contact together in hundreds of lives combined with memories of the blissful state we spend reunited between lives. Dr. N, and how does the blending of your energy with your husband make you feel afterward? S, bursts out laughing, like really wonderful sex, only better. Then more seriously, you must understand that I died as an 83-year-old, sick woman. I was tired. It was a long life and I was a cold stove that needed warming up. Dr. N, cold stove? S, yes, I need energy rejuvenation. There is always a transfer of positive energy when we are met by our guides or by someone we love. Eric sparks up my tired energy. He lights a fire inside me to make me whole again. Dr. N, when this meeting is over, what do the two of you do? S, our teacher comes to welcome me back and I am escorted through the mist to our center. When a subject tells me that re-entering the spirit world has the effect of being made whole again, this requires qualification. We receive an infusion of new energy from soulmates and guides who may also transfer part of the energy we left behind back into us as well. However, as I said when discussing spiritual longing, complete wholeness will not take place until our work is done. Despite this, being restored to what we were before the life began is like feeling whole once again. A subject put it this way, death is like waking up after a long sleep where you had just a muddled awareness. The release you feel is one that comes after crying, only here you are not crying. I have tried to show death from the perspective of the soul in order to ease the pain of those left behind. As Plato said, once free of the body, the soul is able to see truth clearly because it is more pure than before and recalls the pure ideas which it knew before. Survivors must learn to function again without the physical presence of the person they loved by trusting the departed soul is still with them. Acceptance of loss comes one day at a time. Healing is a progression of mental steps that begins with having faith you are not truly alone. In order to complete the life contract you made in advance with the departed, it is necessary to rejoin the rest of humanity as an active participant. You will see your love again soon enough. I am hopeful my years of research into the life we lead as souls may assist survivors in recognizing that death only exchanges one reality for another in the long continuum of existence. Earthly spirits. Astral planes. When my hypnosis subjects describe their ascent into the spirit world as rising through misty layers of translucent light, I am reminded of the astral planes we read about in Eastern texts. I must confess that I am not at all attracted to the rigid stair-step quality of exactly seven planes of existence, from low to high, which come from Eastern spiritual philosophy. This is due to the fact that my clients see no evidence of all these planes. It is a human failing to label concepts as a means of codification. In my descriptions about the spirit world, I am as guilty of this practice as everyone else. Perhaps it is best that we simply take those precepts which make spiritual sense to us and reject the rest, regardless of the age of certain ideas or who tells us they are true. The reason for my objections to a rigid formula of specific planes of existence from Earth to a Godhead is that these states are unnecessary inhibitors. All my research with subjects in a higher state of consciousness indicates to me that upon death we go directly from one astral plane around Earth through the gateway into the spirit world. It does not matter if my subject is a young soul or a highly advanced older soul. Right after death they all tell me their soul passes through a dense atmosphere of light around the astral plane of Earth. This light has patches of darkish gray but no impenetrable black zones. Many describe a tunnel effect. All souls from Earth then quickly move into the bright lights of the spirit world. This is a single ethereal space without zones or barriers around it. In the spirit world itself, all the so-called spaces or places available to the reincarnating soul are congruent. For instance, the Akashic record traditions of Eastern thought don't appear to my subjects as being on some fourth causal plane separate from other functional areas. My subjects call these records life books, which are stored in symbolic libraries that are seen adjacent to other spiritual places. One acknowledges there is much beyond the spiritual experience of the reincarnating soul and therefore out of my range of inquiry. Perhaps the whole idea of cosmic planes is basically an attempt to conceptualize stages of ethereal awareness as opposed to movement prevented by barriers. Historically, specific demarcations of planes that enclosed their underworld, designed for certain unworthy souls, have been more prevalent in human thinking. I will discuss this further in Chapter 6. When my subjects tell of traveling interdimensionally, I suppose one could interpret this as soul movement through planes. The term, plane is not used nearly as much as the words levels, edges, borders and divisions, except when a client refers to Earth. People in hypnosis report that within the astral plane surrounding Earth, alternate or coexistent realities are part of our physical world. Apparently, within these realities, non-material beings can be seen by some people in our physical reality. I have been told of multitudes of interdimensional spheres that are used by souls for training and recreation from the spirit world. Spiritual boundaries can be as small as the glass-like divisions between cluster groups, or as large as the zones between universes. I am told all spatial zones have vibrational properties that allow for soul passage only when their energy waves are attuned to the proper frequency. The more developed souls explain that absolute time as we know it does not seem to exist in these areas. Does the physical world of Earth have similar characteristics that are unseen by most of us? I had a thoughtful client who wrote me the following after his session. Working with you has made me realize that our reality is like a movie projector showing us images on a three-dimensional screen of sky, mountains, and seas. If a second projector, with its own imprint of alternating light frequencies and space-time sequences, was synchronized with the first, Both realities could exist simultaneously with material and non-material entities in the same zone. If what people in a trance state tell me about this system has validity, etheric beings would be capable of existing in different realities within the same astral plane surrounding Earth, indeed on Earth itself.